come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Hello, and thanks for listening to the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast. We're a movie review podcast, and we come at you every Saturday. You'll find a new episode. This is like 223, I think.
Damn. Did you look?
I think I looked. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think I looked, but now I'm not entirely sure.
Since we missed celebrating our 200th, now we're keeping track.
Yeah.
Wait till we get to 300.
Only 80-odd more episodes, or 70-odd more episodes to go.
We'll get there.
We've got an amazing back catalog. We would like for you to check them out. Why not? You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, YouTube.
CastRoller.
You keep bringing that up.
Do you listen
to us on CastRoller?
No, that's why I keep bringing it up. I've never heard of this before. I can't imagine why anybody would listen to anything on CastRoller. No offense to you, CastRoller people, but why?
Podbay. I think we're on Podbay, too.
Yeah, I listen. That's the one I used for a long time.
We're syndicated all over the world. The internationally renowned show program, the Saturday Night Freak Show.
On right after Harry and Ellen.
And so what we do is we choose movies. There's four of us, and we pick them round robin every week. We don't know what we're going to watch until, you know, the end of tonight.
Sometimes
we're going to find out.
Not till the day of. It's happened.
Sometimes not till the moment of,
yeah.
Sean.
Yeah, like, huh? Yeah. What should we watch? Sometimes we got to take a break and figure it out. You'll never know.
Sean's an infamous, oh, is it my pick?
Yeah. Yeah, is it me? Oh.
It's always good to be prepared. Who are the internet radio superstars?
Holly.
Michaela.
Sean.
And I'm Colin. And tonight we watch the movie that was chosen by...
Sean!
Me!
And what do we watch tonight,
Sean? We watched John Carpenter's Escape from L.A. from 1996.
Why'd you...
God bless it.
Escape from L.A. and not Escape from New York?
Two reasons. One, Escape from L.A. was the first one I saw, and it's the one I grew up watching. It played on HBO all the time. So whether I wanted to or not, it was there to watch. Number two... I don't like Escape from New York that much.
Now,
I just offended Colin.
Now, really, this should not come as a shock because Sean is pretty famous for being Sean of sequels.
I will. I like my sequels.
Yeah.
I want to explore them. I want to know why. Like, why? I want to know why.
Yeah.
Right, in the world of sequels, nobody ever they pay less attention to the sequels, I think. And
That's for a good reason.
Sometimes it's for a good reason. Yeah. Sometimes it's not.
They're historically more expensive to make and make less money.
Yes, usually.
Not anymore, right? Now it's like you build all the sets for the first one. And then you pump all your money into that.
You're assuming they build sets for movies now?
They didn't even build sets for this movie.
Green screen sets?
Yeah. All your R&D. Your virtual sets.
Robert Rodriguez is doing the remake. Because he saw this movie and it's like, I can do that better.
Well, Robert Rodriguez, it was announced recently that he's going to be helming the Escape from New York remake.
Oh, goody.
And I mean, I remember his fascination with this movie. I think, you know, the first one. Was that he saw that when he was a kid and became obsessed with it so much so that, you know, I remember in El Mariachi, he had his mariachi carrying the MAC-10 because the MAC-10 was the weapon of Snake Plissken in the first one.
Yes, it was.
So he's got like a long history with it, and hopefully he will do well.
As long as, what's his name's not attached to it. Who was the actor attached to it before
it was
Robert?
Gerard Butler
was.
Timothy Oliphant. Yeah. And there's been a number of people.
I could definitely see Timothy. Does he have long hair?
He did, Justified for a while.
He did. And he did a few movies where he had longer hair. Yeah.
Does he have to look just like Kurt Russell in order to do justice
to
Kurt
Russell's hair is its own entity.
Yeah, you can't duplicate that. Yeah. I was watching this movie and I was like, I wish I had that hair. And I'm like, even if I did have that hair, I couldn't pull it off. I don't have like the facial structure of Kurt Russell. Yeah.
No, you don't have that square face.
He's got that. It's that beautiful square face.
Yeah.
Do you think his hair is insured?
I don't think he's that.
Well, I mean, celebrities insured.
I mean, have you seen
body parts?
Yeah, and have you seen pictures of him from the new Guardians? Like,
yeah.
it's really back.
It is back. Like
it's
he got
back.
Pretty again. God damn it, Kurt Russell.
He's growing it back out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I'm kind of curious, Sean. I mean, I'm assuming that most of our audience is familiar with probably both of these movies, or at least who Snake Plissken is.
I would say so.
Although, this was an interesting thing at the time. I remember when this movie came out, like, the posters all said, Snake is back, big letters on top of it. And I was sitting there as a lifelong fan of Escape from New York going, like, does anybody in 1996 like know who the fuck this is? You know, I mean, like mainstream cinema goers. Because
that's a while later. That's a big time gap between the first movie and this one.
The first one was what, 81?
81, yeah. Yeah. That's a big time gap. Oh, I want to ask you guys, or at least Colin, why do you like Escape from New York? What why was that a big fascination for you guys? I mean, I can see why if you're younger, kind of the liking for it, but I've only seen Escape from New York later on in life as I've been older. Never watched it as a kid.
You saw L.A. first.
And I saw L.A. first and as a kid. And I think that probably has a lot to do with it.
And see, me as a kid, I watched it as a kid, and I have not seen it as an adult, Escape from New York.
New York.
So, like, watching this, I didn't remember anything from Escape from New York. So
that's okay.
Clearly, it didn't stick with me. I mean, granted, I was a little girl. But,
sure.
But still, like, some things did. Like, Caddyshack was my favorite movie, you know, like, as a five-year-old girl. So I can't say I was typical, but it never stuck with me. So why did it stick with you, Colin?
I think Escape from New York was my Caddyshack. I don't know. There was something.
That's the oddest thing. One of the oddest things you've made on this podcast. Me.
I've owned this movie in like.
This is my Caddyshack.
I've owned Escape from New York, I think, in every single video format that it's come out.
As did you get the special edition when it came out?
On the on the wall. Or not. Sorry. I haven't got the Scream Factory one. I got the MGM Blu-ray. So yeah. Okay. So
Scream Factory.
But I had it on Blu-ray, or I have it on Blu-ray. Nice, yeah. But I got the Snake Plissken action figures. They're mounted on the wall behind you. The Snake Plissken, or the Escape from New York posters signed by John Carpenter. When I met him, that was the one that I brought.
Why was it that
that's
one?
A hard choice to make. Yeah, that is a hard choice to make.
I mean, it also depends on what you had at the time. Like,
well, yeah,
if you had a Thing poster or anything
I
like
didn't.
That.
So it was the one that I had. Okay. But that was the one that I chose to purchase. Because I think of all, and I was thinking about this tonight while I was watching this movie. I think of all movie characters ever, I want to be Snake Plissken.
Ever.
I've always wanted to.
Ever. He wants to be Snake Plissken.
I think that's, And because I think at the time that I saw it, I was probably, you know, like 10 to 12 years old, and he was just the baddest motherfucker. Because he just wants you to leave him the fuck alone.
Right?
That is his whole thing.
What does he do when he's not being recruited for jobs?
I know.
Like, what does Snake Plissken do?
It's got to be the most boring life. Well, they say in this movie that he's a gunfighter, but it's a little retro, you know, fitting.
Right.
Trying to make him into a Western hero because I think, you know, famously, John Carpenter wanted Kurt Russell to kind of emulate Clint Eastwood in his performance.
It showed.
Yeah.
Because in the first one, he goes so far as to pair Kurt Russell up with Lee Van Cleef, who is famously in, you know, a bunch of Sergio Leone Westerns with, you know, Good, Bad, and the Ugly with Clint Eastwood. So.
There well, and Kurt Russell says all of like 200 words in this movie.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't say lies.
It's attitude, right?
And he's got that, that Clint Eastwood.
Talks
I don't give a fuck about your war. Or your president.
Snake
Plissken. He's a bad motherfucker. And the whole idea of like in the first one anyway of like, you know, that they would make Manhattan into a maximum security penitentiary didn't seem that far-fetched at the time. This is before the Giuliani cleanup. You know, it's like
this is dirty, nasty New York.
Yeah, I was like, that's just a wallet off.
This is a lost cause. Get rid of that. And
So I'm curious, you know, like, you know, I recognize now that Escape from New York, you know, has a lot of the seams show. Yeah, and the movie. I mean, I still think it's a goddamn classic, but I appreciate the fact that, you know, like a younger audience probably would go into it going like, eh, some of the, you know, there's supposed to be a crowd here and there isn't.
The seams of Escape from New York don't bother me. And you guys cringe at the CG in this movie, but it's not great. I mean, that is 1981, but it's not great in that movie either, in Escape from New York. Some of that's pretty bad, but
Jim Cameron doing special effects matte paintings and stuff like that for that.
Yeah. The matte paintings, yes.
Yeah,
they're not so much better in this movie.
They're 10 times worse,
they're,
aren't they?
I mean, they're like, just they're
the
bad.
First experimentation with computer graphics, like the company that did this for this movie, had never done it before. Yeah, had no idea. What
Buena Vista.
Who was it? Yeah, did you look it up?
Buena Vista.
Buena Vista did their own. These are like PlayStation 1
they
generation
are
graphics.
So much.
Even N64.
It depends on how blocky the scene got.
No, some of the scenery to me was very like Cool World-esque. It was so animated. Like for real.
Right, because you can see the composites of how they're putting like, there's the street, that really exists. But then these shitty Shitty buildings, it's like a CG.
Right.
Yeah. Right, it's just added in there, and you can see it. And this is where you can really see the seams of this movie. Mm-hmm. I couldn't see it so much because they are in like fucking dirty, disgusting New York in the first one, where it's just like, that's it, nothing to dress up. But in this, they're trying to make LA look like a shithole.
Yeah,
and it's just you can see just the lines of everything, and
First one, they got lucky; they were able to shoot in famously, I think St. Louis had a fire that in like 79 78 79 something like that, and they had closed down like a portion of the downtown, so they actually shot in, you know, so they were able to like, you know, basically take over the city, turn off lights.
Sorry, all you St. Louisans who lost
today,
your
St.
homes
is
and everything
still gross and dirty in certain parts, like
still recovering from the fire.
I mean there's parts of St. Louis that like look like you could be in Detroit.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, you know how like every horror movie now is filmed on that same street in Detroit? Like, there's streets like in St. Louis like that, you know, so it's still like that today.
Like Gary, Indiana?
Yes, like Gary, Indiana.
Dude,
Indiana famous for being good?
No, it's bad. I was coming home from Michigan.
Why
I was driving through Chicago and I got lost and I was like, oh my God, I'm in Gary. Yep. Oh my God, it was so
Gary,
scary.
I was driving by myself and I stopped in Gary, Indiana for gas, and the gas station I stopped at, I went inside to pay. The potato chips were in like a barred off box that was locked, like on
chips,
the counter.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need to get the fuck out of here as I can.
Dude, as soon as you roll into town, you just know where you are,
dude.
You just
know.
Except
Michael Jackson.
They're one and only claim to fame.
Yep, basically.
Yeah.
It'd
been better if they were some off-brand snacks that they just barred up. I ran into a snack the other day. This is completely off topic. It was called. They're called Rap Snacks.
What?
R-A-P?
R-A-P with like.
What are they?
Rappers on the front.
Shut up!
I kid you not. They're called Rap Snacks and hip hop.
Like
hip
hop.
Yep. On the front.
Rap Snacks.
Rap Snacks.
Did they have big gold chains? And-
I mean, they did. Yes. That's just, and different. Oh, it was fantastic.
What
like,
year is it?
Where the hell am I, Rap Snacks?
Where
like,
did
well,
you
hey,
see
you,
these? At like
played,
a gas station?
Your odds. It's on some fucking mobile on North Main.
What?
Yeah, it's like right down the street. Yeah. Craziness.
If you ever are driving through Indiana, just go around Gary.
God.
If it takes you longer, just do
it's
it.
It's terrifying.
So they should wall that off and make it into a maximum security prison.
Most things are boarded up anyway.
Yeah,
but,
exactly. Yep.
But you should just
or
go in, quickly.
Yeah, there's bars over it.
Go
there's
quickly.
There's bars over everything in Gary.
It's terrifying.
Wasn't there an adventure show called Gary, Indiana?
All right. Well, okay. The people are here listening for an Escape from L.A. podcast.
They will get it.
So
we will
question,
get there.
Incidentally, they also got lucky this time because there was an earthquake in Los Angeles. So most of those, when they're driving down the street and there's all those houses, it's because the earthquake had hit. So you saw Escape from L.A. first.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess then what was your experience watching Escape from New York when you went back after this one, after loving this one so much on HBO?
After going, Escape from New York seemed, I only have like LA to compare it to, but it's very, there's not as much character, like big bombastic characters as there are in this one, which I think I liked more as a kid. B, I like more now. It's kind of like, not a lot happens. And I mean, it is kind of dated in that. I mean, at the end of the movie, and spoiler for everybody, he unravels a cassette tape and, you know, walks off into nothing. And like, that's the big thing they're after, the president and the cassette tape.
That's the thing. He fucks over the United States at the end, which is not dealt with in this one at all.
No, right? No, not at all. But
because that basically plunges the world into war, I believe. That
is,
was
that,
the
is
thing.
That what it yeah, happens? To, like, was, I know it's a peace summit that they're going to.
Yeah, but the president is going to the peace summit to say, like, look, we've developed this fusion thing, and we're going to, you know, if you don't step off, we're going to blow your shit up.
Right. And I only have this tape to explain it to you. And if I don't have this, that's it. Like, everything relies on this tape. We don't have some paperwork he can read off of to explain that we have this fusion system.
Yeah.
It's got to come off the cassette tape or everything's fucked.
He doesn't have like a dream journal that he started on?
Something. Anything. Like, there's nothing else that's going to help them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't have the scientist who like came up with who's on the tape?
Anything else.
Yeah.
This tape is the key to this. That bothered me. That I didn't think was a strong... Maybe it was strong back then, but I didn't think it was a strong plot point. None of the other characters in that movie are very they're not as developed.
You're speaking
as,
heresy here, Sean. This is you got the
Duke
of New York, number one. The very British president of the United States,
which they do get Donald Pleasance to yell in this movie, which is the best part. Yeah. Just like, you know, the Duke of New York, a number one, the way he yells, and it's wonderful.
Oh, it's fantastic.
And he does get to blow him away at the end, which is great. I'm just like, whoa, cathartic. Donald Pleasance is like kicking ass here.
Yeah.
Why he had to stop Snake, I don't know. Yeah. Just like hang him in there as bait. But
Brain and Maggie and Cabby, like, I don't know what the... Okay,
you so just anyway. Like Adrian so, Barbeau, and well, that's yeah. clouding your vision of that movie, I think.
Because she's also maybe rightfully badass so. In that movie.
Is she? What does she do, Collins? What does she
as,
do?
As, like, Brain's right-hand man, she's, like, the one who's got... comes up with the plan. Like, he's supposedly the guy who's got all the... Well, okay, so this movie...
No, I don't know. We got to talk about both of them.
You can...
We have time.
I haven't seen the first one, guys. I mean, I did a long time ago, but sure. As far as I'm concerned, I haven't seen it, because I don't remember
well,
any of
you
it.
Kind of have, because you sat through Escape from L.A., yeah. which is...
Okay.
Very true. Yeah, basic yeah. plot points are yeah. repeated,
yeah.
to say
lots
the least.
Of them.
I kind
of...
picked yeah. up on that. Yeah. I mean, just, you know.
But if it worked the first time, hey, why reinvent the wheel?
If it's not broke,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, tell him he's going to die unless he helps us, and there you go. It worked once. Let's do it again.
I have questions about this. We were bringing this up during the actual movie, but in the first movie, mm-hmm. he's sent in to rescue the president of the United States who's gone down in the maximum security penitentiary yes. of New York. In this one, he has to save... Well, ostensibly the president's daughter, but he's
yes.
really after a black box, the mm-hmm. the tape, I guess.
The tape of this one, yes.
From L.A., which has had an earthquake hit it. Now it's out in the middle of the ocean, right?
Yeah.
That's
right.
Where America sends all of its undesirables.
It's
so,
America's Australia.
Yes,
it's, yeah. it is. Yes.
The prison.
We mentioned that earlier. It was like, yeah. this is like Australia,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Basically,
all the
yes.
criminals, quote unquote.
Yes.
But the island is basically Cyrus and all the Warriors gangs just hanging out, burning shit,
basically.
Driving around classic cars. Like every yeah. perfectly yeah. restored classic car is on this island.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's where they all end
so
up.
They're all
right?
in LA right now anyway. So, yeah. I mean.
So when it goes down.
Right. They're all just going to get stuck there and hang
it's
out.
It's a little Mad Max-ish. Mm-hmm.
Well,
classic
it's anytime you get yeah. your dystopian yeah. future, right?
Very true.
But in the original, yeah. they give him 24 hours because that's when the summit's going to happen, and he has to get out in 24 hours.
Right.
So it's like, okay, you get a full day to explore New York. In this one, they give him what almost
hours.
Seems like an arbitrary 10 hours.
Yeah.
Because we got to up the stakes somehow.
Right. But it's the attack is imminent at this point. I
yeah.
think that's why.
The movie still runs about the same length of time. So, I mean, really, it doesn't matter. This is one of the first things I had an issue with. And, like, in their reimagining, I'm like, why does it matter if it's 10 hours or 24 hours?
Yeah.
You're just putting a timer on
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
The movie's going to run the same amount of time. It's up to you as a storyteller to, you know, make it seem like it's urgent.
Right.
You know?
I'm guessing they didn't want to shoot during the day.
Yeah, this
just
movie
keep it all at one night.
Had like what 27 night shoots in a row.
Yeah,
like it was driving the people crazy because they had were on a fucked up third shift schedule of having to sleep during the day and go shoot at night for a month straight.
Mm-hmm.
They envisioned
vampire time.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
They envisioned it as a night movie and they just kept with it. So they're just like, well, we have to have shorten the time, keep
well,
it all
do
at
that
night.
In the first one, but there's that kind of like
well, he wakes
super,
up during the day.
Yeah, he sleeps during the day.
He loses like 10 hours during that point in the
uh-huh.
movie.
Yeah. So in the first one, they inject him with these capsules that are lodged in his arteries that will explode.
Yes.
In 24 hours.
They inject him. They inject him in the first one, too.
Well, that's what we're saying. It happened. It's
beat
the same,
by beat the same movie.
Wow.
They, yeah. They inject him with two little capsules in his arteries that will explode if they don't microwave them by the end of the movie.
Which
by
higher stakes, then you're just going to die in 10 hours. Like,
yeah.
exploding is way more like,
that's yeah, that's a more imminent, just
yeah,
like,
exactly.
I'm going to explode. Okay.
Yeah.
But
no,
then
you'll
go do some stuff.
Die from
but
this virus.
But that's what I don't get. I mean, you brought it up, but I've been yeah. thinking this for years. It's like this makes no sense. So in this one, his reason for getting out in the 10 hours, they inject him with a virus, and so he's going to get sicker and sicker and sicker the longer until he dies.
While you're asking him to do this incredibly physically demanding
yeah.
task.
At one point, at
what sense does that make?
At one point, they're literally like, "Yeah, you better go do that." Just so you know, the next thing that's going to happen is you're going to get flu-like symptoms.
Yeah,
like,
you're
going to
get weaker, less energy.
Yeah, and you're going to get fever. Which, like, have you ever tried to function, do anything with a fever? It's hell. It's awful.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Why would they do that to him? It's like, yeah. we need you. We're picking you because we want you at your peak performance to be able to get this job done because nobody else can do it. By the way, you're just going to slowly like battery drain and deteriorate.
Yeah.
And probably not going to be able to do much, but
yeah. That seemed like a little bit of a logic bomb right there.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
that's hard to get past. Mm-hmm.
They surf in this movie. So I'm just saying.
He says with a smile.
I mean, hallmark of a bad movie is if you have like a scene where there's skateboarding, surfing, or rollerblading, right? Like, no. As soon as you see that, you're in trouble.
No, I gotta disagree. I feel like this is the mark of a 90s movie. We've got our checklist again. You know, we got the helicopter. We've got explosions.
Gotta have a helicopter.
We have surfing.
We've got our Rob Zombie music.
Yep.
That's very true.
It's hitting some core 90s checklist points.
It really is.
Yeah.
Well, we also had said that this basically checks off the dystopian future from the world of Demolition Man.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, apparently the same universe.
Came out 3 years before this, by the way, so you could argue this movie's knocking off Demolition Man. So, let's see. For the Demolition Man checklist, we have the burning Hollywood sign.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have the earthquake that created this dystopian future. Because remember, that's when Stallone's wife died in the big one of 2010.
Right.
Yep. Right.
We had no swearing, no meat, no smoking, no fornicating, no drinking. Are not allowed in the future.
Which is interesting. Okay, so both of those movies, I mean, like, so this is like a zeitgeist kind of thing or something, mm-hmm. right? It's like mm-hmm. these are the last, like, gasps of the... Well, it feels like it's like the non-politically correct filmmaker, right? Or star, I guess Stallone in that case, and John Carpenter in this case, the iconoclast who's like, you know what, I just want to be left alone so I can smoke, so I can eat red meat, so I can swear and not have the morality police, like, on my case.
I'm tired of everybody on my case, yes.
And he's actually gone and made the morality police like the president of the United States, who in this case is
he made them literal morality police.
Fanatic.
But it's just like within Demolition Man, we only know the United States to exist within the LA area.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Demolition Man, we don't know what happened to the rest of the fucking country.
Right.
And
yeah,
this
yeah,
one,
yeah.
this all takes place in the same area too. It's beat for beat. It's Demolition Man. Just it's not as good.
I don't know. See, now I knew this was going to come up about Demolition Man and this being not as good. And I don't see how you can give a pass to Demolition Man and then torpedo this movie.
Demolition
effects
Man.
Aside, because we all know the effects
on the table
are very bad in this movie.
Demolition Man knows exactly what it is and doesn't take itself seriously. This movie takes itself seriously.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
What?
Yeah,
it has a movie where Snake Plissken surfs down Hollywood Boulevard or wherever the hell it was. It has a scene where he has to play.
He hang glides.
Where he has to play.
He has to play basketball. He has to play basketball.
Yeah, but that's done in slow mo, like it's serious. That's a slow mo basketball shot, free throw kind.
It's a joke. That's
it. Did not feel like a joke. It did not feel like a joke.
I don't know. I don't know if that's a joke, Colin.
Isn't?
I don't think it is.
Isn't the whole thing like this more so than the first one? I think the first one had an element of satire in there where it was kind of biting satire at society as a whole, right? Yes. Because John Carpenter, I think, like, just it's his worldview. He works it into all of his movies.
Yeah.
But this one is, like, very, very broadly, like, a satire specifically of Los Angeles, you know, the people of Los Angeles, the type of people who live there. You know, I mean,
but
the Surgeon General of Beverly Hills,
the surgery people.
The gangs like that Holly pointed out that were driving by 20 miles an hour shooting at each other. You know, the kid gangsters. It's like, this is, you know, right?
Yeah, but what the fuck does that basketball gladiator scene have to do with any of that? There's no commentary.
John Carpenter likes basketball. Yeah, I don't know.
as Holly pointed out, they acted like they're watching a gladiator fight and they're watching one guy shoot free throws while a bunch of people with guns are standing.
It is a very serious moment in this movie.
It's real serious.
Do you remember the gladiator fight from the first movie?
Yeah, baseball movie? Bats with nails and whatnot.
I'm telling you, like, everything that happens, you just call it out, we'll tell you what the analogy is in the first movie.
Thing.
In the first one, he has to fight the guy, the big wrestler dude with the bats that have nails in him.
Way higher stakes.
But not an exciting scene for me in the first movie. I think it's the way it's shot. It's the way it's shot, because most of it's wide angle, just outside of what's going on in there. You get a few that come in, but it's not like you're in the action. So it's not as exciting to me.
So in this movie, we've got the Che wannabe, the Jose Cuervo. Yeah.
Yes.
Just like
Cuervo. Cuervo
exactly.
Jones.
Exactly.
Cuervo Jones.
Yeah. Exactly like Che. Who is it in the first movie?
It's a revolutionary.
The Duke of New York.
He's the Duke of New York.
Yeah. Isaac Hayes.
Yeah.
Finn Isaac Hayes is the Duke of New York.
He's got chandeliers on the front of his car.
Chandeliers on the front of his car. Okay. Just on each one. It's great.
All right, I kind of want to see that.
You should see it again.
So they swapped that out for doll heads and
basically,
Chico
Rivera's
car.
Yeah.
Well, he had the disco ball on the back.
Very true. Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah, chandeliers.
But okay, so the basketball court
Ernest Borgnine is in that movie.
Really? Huh. Yes. So the basketball scene, you've got all these guys that, like, if you don't make the free throw points within the amount of time, whatever, like, they're going to shoot you. But they're all standing around the basketball court and all are shooting. They should be hitting each other.
I believe that setup happens at least three times in the movie where Snake is surrounded by...
It happens a couple times.
And they all shoot at each other. Like,
it's like, don't do that.
You guys don't understand
if you're gonna the shoot physics people. Of this.
Yeah.
Don't stand in the
circle. Don't stand in the circle.
Don't stand across.
If you get
anybody.
Anything from this podcast, take that away from me.
That's right, why, so that's why a firing squad isn't a straight line.
Here's a question for you. John Carpenter is a director primarily known for his horror films, I think, right? Horror and science fiction films.
Yes.
What's the best action movie that John Carpenter's ever directed?
Escape from L.A.
Escape from New York, I would say. I like it better than Big Trouble in Little China. I don't like that one as much.
But as far as, I mean, okay, I'll grant you that. I mean, I think Escape from New York's probably, you know, as
they
an action movie.
They Live is pretty good, too.
Is it an action movie?
Oh, They Live,
They Live is definitely more of an action movie than a horror movie, for sure. Definitely more of an action movie.
Like there's like a lot more action
in fight scene, nonstop.
Oh, yeah. I like They Live. Yeah. I'm going to have to go
with
that.
They Live is actually
But I think that's a thing. Like, both Escape from New York and Escape from L.A. are set up as action films, but I don't think John Carpenter is, I mean, he's not obviously not a contemporary action film director. That's why I think, Sean, you're having the problem with the you know, the action beats in the original movie.
Yeah,
and I have a problem with the action beats in this one. The motorcycle chase where he's chasing Cuervo Jones.
We're all
down
going so slow. On those motorcycles.
Well, it's the kind of things that you do. It was like that's how like John Ford would shoot like a stagecoach chase or something where the you know the cowboys are riding and the Indians are chasing on the horses or whatever. It's like that's what he's trying to do there.
Yeah. And complete
I think he's
with
paying homage to the movies that he liked as a kid.
Probably,
there's a very heavy Western influence
very much
in
so.
This movie.
Absolutely. With the, especially the shooting of just like it's always from like the chest up and it's always that shit you can tell they're just they're not controlling anything that's going on.
Right. You're just right.
They're
being
told. Yeah, yeah. It's very obvious and just with all that green screen background that happens within those parts. That and they're always just driving like it's supposed to be a high speed chase. It's supposed to be action packed and they're just kind of driving like 5 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Though that always that bothers me about this movie. No, it's just not. Snake Plissken on a motorcycle should be one of the most exciting things you see in a Snake Plissken movie, and it was not in this movie because he was made to ride a motorcycle.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's not exciting.
Yeah. Now, does the first one have a Western feel?
No.
No.
Not at all?
Really?
Not to me.
Not in the... Not in the
heavy-handed.
Yeah.
Not with the music that is in this movie.
God.
But I think that is exactly it. It's like, it's there in the first one, but it's kind of like this influence.
Subtle? Yeah.
Where in this one, it's like, okay, we're going to put Snake Plissken in a duster.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to make over his look and put him in a duster. We're going to play a theme
a
song that is clear, has got a harmonica in it for Christ. Wow, twangy guitar.
Twang, oh, yeah. Twang soundtrack dun, 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 was dun, dun, dun,
he's identified
I love this
as
music.
A gunfighter.
Yeah.
He does
the
draw.
The draw.
He's like at the end, he's fucking Clint Eastwood at that point.
Yeah.
He's smoking the cigarette in his mouth, like
an
tucked
American
to the side.
Spirit cigarette.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what he was going for. It's like, this is his Western.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, he's written a couple, but I think
sure.
Just make one already. Man.
No, it's
quit
like
how West was Vampires as Western-y?
That was very Western-y
like, from what I remember, it felt very Western-y.
Yeah, but I mean, so is you go back to like Assault on Precinct 13. Mm-hmm. It's basically inner city version of Rio Bravo. Mm-hmm. You know, it's only instead of the Indians outside or whatever, you've got the gang members and the police inside.
Very true.
And he likes, you know, obviously Westerns enough that Kurt Russell's basically doing John Wayne in Big Trouble in Little China. So he's got to, you know, do imitations of both Clint Eastwood and John Wayne.
Yep. Which I'm sure Kurt Russell loved.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell.
He's a Western guy. He's done Westerns before. It's kind of his name.
Oh, God. Tombstone.
Yeah.
Man, I love that movie.
I need to revisit
and
Tombstone.
Recently,
I haven't seen that in a while.
He was in Magnificent Seven, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Was he?
Yeah.
You show up in that?
Who is that? Kurt Russell?
Yeah.
Yeah. Bone Tomahawk?
Yeah.
Oh, Bone Tomahawk.
Hateful Eight? Yeah. I mean, he's.
Yeah. Kurt Russell.
All right.
Let's just end this with Kurt Russell. He's like, Kurt Russell.
Well, I mean, Kurt.
So
see, but
he's
that's
so
the thing.
Great,
like, Kurt Russell, well, Snake Plissken is one of those characters. I think that, like, you know, I think it's, and it's like hard to pin down, like, what about him is so, like, appealing over all this time. But it's the idea, I think, that, you know, and maybe I'm saying this because Carpenter's pointed out, and he made it a concerted effort to make the same thing happen. He's the guy who's like, when everything's like,
everything's going to shit,
I don't know what the fuck to do. He'll like take a chair and sit down and go like, well, I just got to think about it for a while. He's an action movie hero who sits and considers his options. You know, I don't know if that's what makes him more appealing, but that's what, you know.
It is nice to see that it's just like not just constantly on the move and just going.
I've got answers
just,
for everything.
Bam, bam, bam. Right. He's just going to sit and be
he's
like,
"Very much like, well, fuck, what now?"
It is a lot of it's like I got to sit and
because
think about it, or
all
I just got to.
Us would do.
Yeah. Like, well, what would I do? Or grab some and be like, where? Which point the way? He's constantly asking for directions.
Yeah. He's like wasting no time. He's like, where is Clairvo where? Jones? How do I get to
right,
where
it's like
I'm
the
going?
Easiest,
he's just
like,
pulling people off the street.
Yeah, it's like I need to get here. How do I get there?
Yeah.
Go down that alleyway, honey.
I guess that's what you do, right?
I wonder if any of us would like either of these movies as much if it was not Kurt Russell in that role. Because it was supposed to be Jeff Bridges.
Very true.
And
he
turned
it
down
it.
And then later did Starman with John.
Mm-hmm.
But
this movie, Escape from LA, would be relegated to a direct to video shelf were it not for John Carpenter and Kurt Russell. Like, if you made the same exact movie,
right.
Everything, but just took those two out of it, like,
yeah.
Memorable, no, not at all. Yeah. This would nobody would watch this movie.
I mean, I like.
Does anybody watch this movie? I don't know. But
yeah, I think because it's a John Carpenter film, and you know,
it gets more consideration
because it's in his filmography, and I think because it's related to the first one, mm-hmm. which I think still has you know a big enough fan base that they're releasing special editions. You know, Shout Factory
special editions and remaking.
And
it
so. Seems like I mean, I watched the first one not too long. It was on like Movies TV or this or Grit or one of those. Like you know, they seem to play it like all the time. So
Grit.
It's still running out yeah. there in perpetuity,
yeah,
it's right?
There.
Yeah.
Forever
well, I mean,
and ever.
When you think of Kurt Russell, the first two movies you think of are
Executive
John,
Decision.
Are both
okay, no,
John
not
Carpenter
that one.
Movies, right? Right.
The
no.
Thing and
the
Escape
thing.
From New York.
Yeah. Or even Big Trouble in Little China and Escape from New York.
Yeah.
You know, my,
Tombstone and Overboard.
Overboard. That's yep. What I was gonna say. Overboard. There you go. That's, yeah.
Overboard. We had different well, childhoods. Tombstone yeah. and Overboard, yeah. Hands down.
Well, I know that Kurt Russell took a chance because he was a Disney kid before that. He'd done like the computer wore tennis shoes
yeah.
and all that. And I think
he
had done
did a voice
Elvis
in The
with,
Fox and the Hound.
No one thinks of Sky High.
What?
When
Sky High. That was, that's a good movie. Has anybody seen Sky High?
No.
The superhero movie?
No.
It looks awful.
It's actually a good movie.
Really?
Take that for what you will because I like this movie. No, he's not.
Okay.
No, that's like Spy Kids 3.
That's
yeah.
What he's
saying. No, it's actually a good movie.
What year are we looking at there?
Like 2000
something.
It's like
yeah.
The aughts.
Maybe
really?
2006 or 7 or something like that.
It was like an aughts Disney movie, wasn't it?
Maybe 8.
I don't know this at all.
I remember seeing trailers.
Yeah, it's like a high school of super superheroes and yeah. They're like the famous actual superhero parents of one of them going to school.
Really?
So mm-hmm. He's not in it like a whole lot. He shows up from time to time and at the end during the big set pieces and everything. It's actually a pretty good movie.
Did we also mention that Kurt Russell co-wrote this movie?
He co-wrote
his only writing credit.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Because this, you can feel
he wrote the entire ending of this movie.
As you're watching the movie, I think like one of the things that is prevalent, you correct me if I'm wrong,
okay.
Is that you can feel that the people making the movie are having a lot of fun
yes.
making the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like this is
yeah.
them fucking off. You know, it's like, we got this money. Yeah. I mean,
what are the things we wanted
Pam
to
Greer
do in a movie?
Especially. Oh, Pam Greer.
Pam
Greer.
Fun.
They are, I think they, it feels like they all are. They're mm-hmm. doing something that I think, you know, like Carpenter and Russell love the character.
Yep.
Love, you know, people keep coming back to them. Even now, I saw Kurt Russell on The View promoting
I saw it, yeah,
The Furious,
and
the Fate of the Furious, and
they
all
had, they
asked
had
him
eye
to wear
on.
Eye patches because he's Snake Plissken.
Wow.
You know,
yeah.
So it's like it's still an enduring thing. But
yeah,
you know,
what else can you do? Put on a beard and wear a big coat for the
yeah.
thing. Like it's,
right.
It's also
yeah.
the easiest one to do.
Yeah,
yeah exactly. Yeah, yeah. Nobody would get that joke.
No.
They're just like.
Nope.
But it's odd to me that, like, I mean, I remember, you know, following John Carpenter's career, it was like, I was always kind of, I felt, you know, dissatisfied with the way that he was treated, it seemed like, by the Hollywood establishment mm-hmm. as a whole, because it always seemed like, you know, he was relegated to, like, you know, we know John Carpenter's out there, but
right.
he's, you know. But I'm like, this guy's really talented, and what he does, like, speaks to me, and I watch all these movies all the time. And this was, like, a major studio production, and he had a budget for the first time in God knows how long, because before this, he was doing, like, you know, the Prince of Darkness, They mm-hmm. Live kind of stuff for, you know, I mean, those were, you know, you do them for, like, $5 million or something like
right.
that, right? It was basically like, the Blumhouse of the...
This had a huge budget.
This was, like, $50
yeah.
million.
And
yeah.
he didn't even make back, like, half of that.
Well, yeah, mm-hmm. well...
Hey.
And hey, it's $50 million in 90s dollars. So uh-huh. That's even more money.
Damn, look at that's like $100 million.
Yeah, it all went on the extras, right? Because yeah. It's full of extras. So the first one's devoid of people. This one's like overflowing.
Yeah. Yes. People inhabit this L.A.
The alleys yeah. are yeah. so crowded.
So crowded.
Mm-hmm.
Oy.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was the thing. Like, this was his big chance, right? You figure if – because he's a filmmaker who, like, always gets the chance and then somehow blows it. Not entirely his fault, I'm uh-huh. saying. But, you know, based on the success of Halloween, which was the, you know, the number one or the highest grossing independent film.
For the longest time.
I think until The Crying Game unseated it, like, in the 90s.
Actually,
Blair Witch as well.
My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
There it is.
Technically an independent movie.
Halloween was still the first?
Yep.
Oh, I thought they said The Crying Game was.
Well, what about
that might have unseated it, but now it's My Big Fat
Greek Wedding.
Now it is. What Blair Witch? Wasn't that the highest at that point? It was like, that was like a $300,000 movie and made millions.
Yeah. But he had an opportunity to go studio with the thing, and then that bombed all over everywhere, and that like torpedoed his career. I think he didn't get the same kind of chances. And this was like, you're gonna get a chance again, John. You know,
right.
You're not dead yet. You can still make more movies. In 1996.
I know what I'll do. Escape from L.A.
Well, that's why they're giving him the money.
Yeah,
but I guess like. Well, that's a wrap up thing. So the movie,
the Plutoxin 7 virus.
Yes, that they inject him with.
Yeah, he's infected. So, like you said earlier, it's like so subtle that they infected him in this movie. He's walking in the hallway and she gets basically just.
Yeah.
It's like, Jesus, you really could have just, you know, shot him at some point.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, with a little dart or something. That something. They have the gear.
You mean an oral projectile?
An oral projectile.
Yeah.
Right into Bruce Campbell's forehead.
Nice visual there.
That's calling out the surgical environment of L.A. That's definitely a satire on that. That was
the
freaky.
The Surgeon General.
Yeah, the Surgeon General just all the freaky faces and everything. That was creepy.
Mm-hmm.
That was really creepy.
That
scene seriously creeped me out.
Yeah.
That was gross.
It seemed really like out of place with the rest of the movie too. Like
it seemed like better part of the movie.
Well, because that scene was the only part that had horror elements.
Yeah.
That's why.
Well, it's probably a big part of it.
Did we mention that Bruce Campbell was in it?
I didn't remember because he's unrecognizable. I mean, you get his voice, the chin is there, but other than that, he's unrecognizable.
He came walking out, I looked at the hair and heard the voice. I'm like, is that who I think it is?
I'm like, I see it in the credit and I know the character he plays, but I don't remember him. It's like, now I know why. Because he's all surgically fucked up in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good scene.
It is a good scene. It's creepy. Scene.
It's very quick, though. It's just like...
It is.
I do like that in this, though, they make... It's like LA's divided up into different fun houses. And you get a different flavor for everyone you visit.
There's
and,
different gangs, and each gang has their own little, like world.
Like you said, exactly. It's like the Warriors, it is and like they the all Warriors. Have their own world. Yeah. But I like that we get to visit each one of them, and that shows like the different sects of the of LA.
I was a little disappointed, because when they talked about going to visit Pam Grier... That, like, they talked about how, like, oh, she, like, runs this shit and everything. And so I was expecting, like, in Sin City, when you go and you see, like, the I can't remember what they're called, but Rosario Dawson's character, part of Sin City, like, how the women run that whole thing.
Yeah.
And, like,
Yeah.
I was expecting more like that, and, like, you get there, and it's not that cool.
No, she's got the Asian.
It's a pool with a gang of Asians.
Saigon Red or the something screaming dragons.
Yeah.
But is that, like, I mean, that's what I'm assuming. Right, I haven't been to L.A., but I assume that's
whatever you get from this movie, that's exactly what it looks like.
I actually
to this day.
Well, I mean that there's these different neighborhoods or sections of the city. But
they are enhancing that, because that's definitely what it is.
It would have been more appropriate if Pam Grier's sect was the theater with all the with all the prostitutes.
Yeah,
that would have been more fitting, I think.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Why
yeah.
so, Holly? Why would that be fitting for Pam Grier?
Because it's fancy.
Because of the theatricality of the character, I assume. They've done something really weird to Pam Grier's voice, because she's supposed to be a transvestite, which I'm like, that's really flattering to, you know. Pam Grier, that's who I think of when I think of a transvestite.
Right.
But
she probably had so much fun with that, though. She's used to being like the sexy woman, and now she gets to be like the transvestite.
Right. Can you imagine?
That had been fun for
John Carpenter would be like, I have a role for you.
She said for her audition, she shoved like three socks down her pants and like, walked in like, "Atta girl." I just started laughing. We're like, all right, okay.
That's
Hershey.
So
Hershey, yeah.
That's great.
Car Jack Malloy.
So you're going like, well, who's Hershey in this? Well, the whole idea of like something happened in Cleveland. In the first one, where was it? Where Fresno Bob and Harold?
Yeah.
Harold Hellman? You, me, and Fresno Bob. You remember what they did to Bob? What was so there was like something that happened before the movie where someone he meets in, you know, the environment has fucked him over. That happened in the original.
Why aren't we making that Escape from Cleveland? Why isn't that the next movie?
Why is it in there? The only reason Cleveland's mentioned so much is because John Carpenter claims he knows someone named Snake Plissken in Cleveland.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the only reason why Cleveland is mentioned so much.
Yeah.
But and it sounds like a whole other movie we missed out on the way they talk
it
about.
Does.
Yeah.
And speaking of, where was the place in the first one? You just watched it this afternoon.
I basically did. I watched that part of it 2 days ago. I don't remember.
I don't remember where that was. But, yeah,
but speaking of Fresno Bob, we learned Snake's name in this movie.
Yeah, S.D. Bob Plissken.
Yep.
Don't they say something like that? Doesn't Hauk say something SD. Like in the beginning?
I don't.
When he brings him in, S.D. Bob Plissken.
I don't think he mentions it,
decorated
though.
By the whatever the hell.
I think he just calls him Snake in that.
No,
does he give him a name?
A name.
No, I don't remember that one.
Call me Snake.
Yeah,
Snake.
How many times does he say that?
Until the end when he says, "Call me Plissken."
I was like, "Wait, make up your fucking mind, there, Snake."
He's contrarian.
That also happens in the first movie.
Does it?
Also, it's also the running joke in this one is like, "I thought you'd be taller." In the first one, it's like, "I thought you were dead."
Kurt Russell's all the time. Short guy. He's not particularly short. He's still taller than everyone that says, "I thought you'd be taller."
But when you're thinking of Snake Plissken, you're just
like, it's because he's a celebrity.
And everybody comes up to him and they're like, "I thought you'd be taller."
Exactly. You'd be taller. Yeah. I'm sure the Tom Cruise gets that a lot. But there's always that running joke like, "I thought you were dead."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Leg wound happens and then he gets shot.
He does get an arrow in his
first
leg.
One, he gets shot in the leg in this one. So he has a limp.
Oh my God.
Does someone bite his leg wound like Che Wannabe does?
No.
No, I don't think there's any biting in the first one.
That was weird.
But I think the Duke like punches it a couple times in that last fight or
something.
That's
more normal. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll go with that.
So Snake Plissken has this like celebrity to him, which is also kind of like I get in the first movie that he's known to the officialdom of the United States Police Force, right? Mm-hmm. Hauk is also a soldier because Plissken and Hauk they fought in Russia apparently in Leningrad or whatever the hell.
Yeah.
And for World War III, I assume, right?
Yeah.
So it's like Hauk kind of respects Snake Plissken. You know, but he recognizes he's a criminal, and so he's chosen for this mission. In this movie, we've got, what's his name, Malloy or something? The Stacey Keach character.
Keech. Ponytail?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody badmouths Stacey Keach on this podcast? Thank you.
I didn't have a problem with him.
Why does he listen?
He does. He's a friend of mine. I prefer we not insult him on the podcast.
I didn't mind him. I have no complaints about him. He's fine.
He has all the dialogue like Hauk does in the first one. Like, no, you got to give Plissken some more time. Just believe in Plissken. Plissken says he thinks like Plissken. So at the end when Snake puts the
unit.
There's a couple of things that, you know, about how he, the first one, he puts a unit in her dress.
Right.
So they'll find it and think that that's the real one.
Because
he's actually got the, and you're like, what kind of fucking twisted logic is that? And they do it at the beginning, too, where he's like, you know, they give him a loaded gun. And he's like, neither one of you is going to cure me with the antidote.
Yeah.
And then he opens fire. We thought you'd do something like that, hot shot. So we loaded to the first clip with blanks. Like, if you know this guy so
that's wonderful.
Why do people know him so well?
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, they were really banking on him, like, shooting with blanks at them right away. He could have fucked up the whole mission had he waited to actually shoot the president's daughter later on.
Or anybody. It's just like life or death moment where he's got to shoot someone.
And right. You'd have dead
just like,
what a fucking gamble to make.
Yep.
But everybody, I guess in the first one,
I think they would have told him before he went down into the sub. And like, by the way, that one's got blanks in it. If he hadn't shot them, that's it.
They were just expecting, expecting because he's Snake Plissken. That's what he does.
That's what he does.
Most readable person in the universe.
Apparently.
And he's the most famous. Everybody recognizes him. Like in the first one, I thought that was weird. Yeah. But they never say
hair.
That.
And that hair.
Yeah.
It's like, hey,
hair
your
and the
hair.
Edge wears the same outfit all the time.
I recognize that hair. Black leather? Holsters on your legs?
Yep.
What has he been doing to like make himself the most wanted man in America? I mean, they say he's convicted of like 15 moral crimes or something like that.
Yeah, but he could have spat in the wrong area.
Utopia could just be swearing, smoking, drinking.
At this point, that's
probably red meat.
Considering he just wants to be alone, that's probably what it is.
Yeah,
I get a burger and a smoke. Right.
He's a felon.
I don't understand what he does in his spare time. I mean, that's my biggest question out of all this.
Gunfighting, like, they tell you. He's gunfighting in New Thailand.
For what, though? For what?
For money?
For fun? Money?
He's a fatalist, right? Well,
it seems like he should be old man Logan, that he just wants to go out into the walls and be left alone and nothing. Like, he doesn't want anything to do with anybody.
Right, but because he just wants to be free, these people keep imposing their laws on him, and he just can't take it. He keeps
Right, if you know Snake Plissken's around, you're going to want to challenge him. You're like, you're Snake Plissken. I could kill you.
But yeah, I guess, okay.
Just don't challenge him to free throws because he's really good. He's really good.
That's what he's really been doing. Good. He's been playing basketball.
His basketball game. His basketball and like that trick, the can trick earlier on.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
Draw.
Well, he's one of those guys who can do anything, right? You need him to fly a plane, a glider, a submarine, a helicopter.
Surf.
You need him to surf.
He's special forces, okay?
Well, it's true. He was special forces, I suppose.
They didn't teach
training.
Surfing. The guy like explained to him what to do.
Yeah, the guy was and like, those, man, you don't want to.
In those 20 seconds. In those 20 seconds it took him.
Yeah.
Peter Fonda teaches him. Yeah. He surfs with Peter Fonda in this movie.
Yes, he does.
Very, very
on a tsunami,
toasted.
Not just surfing. Yeah. They said, oh, it's a tsunami. It's a big one.
It's like the LA River, too. It's just like, it used to be that fucking thing. Now it's just a big tsunami that comes through there.
Oh, 20 seconds, he explained him how to surf, and he was a pro.
How does he surf without any depth perception? How does he do anything without any depth?
So well that he can get close enough to high five him just before he flies off into a car. It's the greatest thing ever. It's so good.
I kind of loved it.
How do you not find joy in these things? What is wrong? What happened to your guys' childhoods that you do not find joy in things like this?
I'm sure someone on the internet has already done it, but someone please take that scene and just put in Wipeout over it.
Please do!
I mean, it was, I'm sure it was this close to being in this movie.
You couldn't get the rights or couldn't afford
it. Yeah, they probably at this point, because they put surf music in there.
You're saying that this movie takes itself seriously? It can't take itself seriously with a scene where
I think John Carpenter's tastes are not looked at as seriously, and I think that's how people look at Carpenter, and I think his tastes are serious for what he has made in this movie. I think he is being serious, and I think other people see that and don't take it seriously, and that's kind of why he doesn't get the respect he obviously deserves at this point. But I think that's what people see in the things he makes. I think that's a part of it, because I think he is doing this seriously. But I think he might sometimes be his own worst enemy in some of the things he makes.
Because why then? You're saying if it's not tongue in cheek, it's serious.
In which case,
he ever made a tongue in cheek movie?
Yeah,
he's not a tongue in cheek guy.
Yeah,
he's like this is
the Memoirs of an Invisible Man. Wow, it's like a straight comedy.
Never seen it.
Yeah,
never seen it.
You were the only one that saw that.
I like that movie. No. That's a
what?
I like that movie. Big Trouble in Little China is a hilarious movie. That is a comedy.
Yeah.
Comedy, action, mystical, martial arts. Huh?
Who wrote that movie?
W.D. Richter, who wrote The Adventures of Bakaru Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension and Dracula, the movie that we watched.
But I think it's written as it's also written as a comedy.
Which one?
Big Trouble.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But I don't think this was written as a comedy. Like, I think that's the difference.
He drives his underwater submarine that he's getting, and it goes by Universal Studios, and the Jaws shark comes out. The mechanical shark comes up and tries to bite him.
That's what it is.
There are elements of it in this movie.
This is not a serious movie.
Okay, but multiple people had a hand in writing this, right?
Well, but they were all, it was like Deborah Hill.
They're all like buddies.
They're all, but it's all like the same person.
I don't think John Carpenter was necessarily the one that wrote those comedic parts.
Right.
That does not have his taste in it. It doesn't feel like.
And even still, a reference to something isn't necessarily a comedic beat. You know, just because they're referencing something that already existed.
And also, like, those scenes had to have been created during what was going on, or at least after the movies. Like, because that whole scene is CG. So, I mean, at that point,
no,
that
I couldn't tell by that, the way it looked.
Right. But not necessarily, like, how much control does he have over, like, those scenes that he's making? Like, we need a submarine trip to here. It's got to hit these beats in it. Like,
I assume you're the director. You get to, like, approve the special effects and say no, and we're going to change this. We're going to do that.
Now, this is making cursed with the Weinsteins.
Yeah.
I mean, but maybe somebody
John
comes
Carpenter
in.
Carpenter with your second chance at, and you've got Kurt Russell, who
Wes
probably
Craven
had
was as big
more,
or bigger than John Carpenter when
but
he made
Kurt Russell was huge when Escape
Very
from New York LA came out.
And he seems like he was a big part of this movie. I mean, obviously.
Was he a producer on it, too?
I didn't see. Was he producer?
A producer?
Yeah.
There was a title card that said, like, executive producers Deborah Hill and Kurt Russell.
Mm-hmm. But we don't know his taste. Maybe that was his idea, Sharks and whatnot.
Yeah, I think they're just, like, they're having fun. They get to skew, like, LA, and they're just roasting LA culture in this movie. Like, it's a satire of Los Angeles.
He's very proud of the final line in the movie because he wrote that. Welcome to the human race.
I like
He's
that.
He's really proud
I
of
like,
that.
When I was younger, I liked that line a lot. Mm-hmm. I used to practice that line. That was one of the just like standing in the mirror Do practicing it. Being, welcome to the human race. Come on.
Kurt Russell, is that you?
I know.
Where did you walk into
that's,
the
theater? That was a good line. I like that line.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. Oh, yeah. That whole ending scene I was a big fan of.
The ending seems out of tone with the movie, but in tone with the character of Snake Plissken.
Yes.
That he would doom the entire
Right,
world.
Yeah. It's just like...
Was he... like he said, Plissken. We're all going to die anyway, so who gives, you know, who gives a fuck, basically?
He doesn't care.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
We all get to start over?
Technology,
great.
Nothing. Yeah, because nothing's going to change for him.
Exactly. It's a dangerous
killed
man.
All those people on life support, but you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit, Colin. Why are you bringing us down while we're watching this comedy movie?
Where's the movie?
Jesus.
I mean, where's the movie of all the people in hospice care that died? As
by the way.
Yep. Snake Plissken, mass murderer.
They weren't going to have a quality of life.
No, probably not.
You know,
but this is also
he's going back
movie.
To Darwinism, right? It's like now the fittest will survive because like, the debt record's gone.
And he's pretty fit.
Yeah.
He's just Dr. Gorkin at this point, right?
But one of the funniest parts of this movie was like at the beginning when they're kind of figuring when they're sending people off to LA, they're just like the announcer's going on. It's like, if you choose to, you can have yourself electrocuted on site before you go, like instead of going over to LA. That's great.
And there was kids watching adults get electrocuted on site.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
That was dark. That was a dark
they
movie.
They do that in the first one.
Yeah, not serious movie. You have children watching people get electrocuted in the first scene in the movie.
Wonderful
black comedy
because children are also criminals.
Yeah,
just
why are you
they're hanging
on
out on the
yeah.
Well, yeah, there's a gang of kids.
There's a gang of small Asian children.
But how did they get there? Did they get like tried for their crimes and sent to that island?
Well, see,
I'm assuming they
how did.
Did
the kids get
I assume
there?
That they
I'm
just
they
yeah that they that when the. They didn't evacuate everybody, obviously. They just sealed off, like, Los Angeles and said that place is already gone to hell.
Mm. And then it fell into the water.
And then it fell into the water, so they just left everybody there. But that's
but
the thing. It's
but
like
they're
the,
sending fresh kids.
But they were, those
oh, yeah, very true.
Oh, yeah. Right,
they
right,
are.
Right,
they
right.
are
yeah.
sending fresh children, as you say.
There was, like, 20 of them in that hallway. Yeah.
Yes. Ah, we're running low. We need more children. Yeah. Please send fresh ones.
Not those dirty, rotten ones. Give us fresh ones.
Yeah. My gang.
Did you think when you were watching this movie that like Snake Plissken would be more at home in Los Angeles than in the United States?
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
So why would you want to escape from L.A.? I mean, I get why you want to escape from New York because there's no freedom in there. I mean, you have the world that they've created, but it's still surrounded by, you know, I mean, it's grimy, dirty, and everybody's trying to
even his,
cannibals
even his female even his female companion at the beginning of the movie is like, well, once you figure it out, it's not a bad place. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the only free place anymore, not the United States.
It's
I mean, she
like
subsequently gets shot.
Demolition Man.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There you go.
If it's only like, it was ruled by Edgar Friendly and not the
rat burgers, which I'm sure there were.
Megalomaniacal Cuervo Jones.
Jose Cuervo.
Yes, Cuervo Jones. What a great, not so great villain.
Seems kind of like a racist name. A little bit.
A little bit for, you know, a Che Guevara ripoff.
What's Hispanic? Tequila.
Tequila's.
Cuervo
Jones.
How they
I feel
dots.
Like in the movie he chose his name.
I feel like it was definitely
Well, I'm assuming that.
I'm agreeing with you. I'm agreeing with you.
Okay, I was just saying, like, wait, you feel what? No, I feel like he chose his name.
Yeah.
Like, I will be Cuervo
probably.
Jones.
He was, you know what? He was probably one of those kids that tried to give himself a nickname, and everyone's like, that's not how it works.
T-Bone!
There it is again.
Yes.
That's why he turned bad, because people were like, dude, you don't give yourself a nickname. He's like, fuck you. Give myself a nickname. And that's how
fuck you,
guy.
Jerk store. And then he's Corvo Jones for the rest of his life.
And so that's why he turned to the bad side. He became a bully.
Yeah, that's how you create villains. There it is. Don't give them the nicknames they want.
Yeah. It's going to go wrong.
So what was really the point of the president's daughter?
She stole the black box.
I mean, I feel like they didn't need that character.
You are correct. Oops.
Yeah. Sorry. I mean, there's...
But really, to be fair, I suppose then in that regard, you didn't need the president in the first one if you only needed the briefcase that was attached to his hand. But you've got to get the president back, you know?
He doesn't do a whole lot in that movie.
But get the president's daughter back, and then it turns out, well, you don't even really need her. Then what's she there for? This movie kills off characters a lot more with a lot more regularity than the original before you have a chance to get really attached to anybody.
Who's it
kills them off.
Renata from Hot Shots.
Yeah, I don't remember what her character's name was because she was barely introduced in the movie.
Yeah. Well, who else besides that? Like, who gets killed off?
Hershey?
Yeah.
Like, what she kind is of, in a blaze of glory. In the back.
An afterthought.
It's like, well, we can't go back to the mainland with this many characters, so something needs to happen.
Yeah.
Steve Buscemi, you jump out. Steve Buscemi's in this movie, by the way. We haven't even mentioned
that yet. He's got the longest running part, I think.
He does, as Maps to the Stars Eddie.
Yeah. That's a cabbie from the first. Sorry, go ahead.
Basically, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would be cabbie. Yeah. Because somebody's got to drive somebody around in this place. Yeah. I mean, it's a rural area. You have to drive around a lot.
Right. Yeah.
It being LA.
How is he making it in this society?
He's working for Cuervo.
He's his agent.
He's a field agent for Cuervo at this point. Yeah. He's got the fucking the darts in the glove box.
See, this isn't like a. That's what I'm saying. It's a comedy. It's a satire. Because the only guy, like, he's the agent is still like able to scrape by or somehow maneuver through the wasteland of Los Angeles.
Just by being slick and by the skin of his teeth, he's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything you're saying sounds right. Like I want to agree with you because you're just like because you know they make this comment on agents and they're just slimy guys and they pick Steve Buscemi for it. It's kind of like perfect for it. Everything you're saying sounds correct. It just feels like there's a serious tone to it. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, it's hard to pinpoint.
Think it's for sure.
Feels serious, but everything you're saying is just like it. Everything you're saying is like evidence that points to this being more satire, like them. Doing that on purpose.
It doesn't feel smart enough to be satire, though. Like, it doesn't feel like it's making its point enough to be satire.
Yeah.
That's why I think it's one of these cases of, like, I think, okay, this is, listeners, you're going to have to agree or disagree with this. If you live in L.A., this is a movie made for people who live in L.A. Like, they get the joke. Right? Because it's made specifically for them. And the rest of us it's a cool science fiction movie or whatever, but it's made for people who live in LA because they're seeing all the, like, I'm sure in theaters when it's played, there was crazy laughter, like, Happy Kingdom.
Sunset! Just because it's on there. You might be right. This may be specifically for, like, an LA crowd that he's playing more to them than anybody else.
We get the action story, but they get the comedy.
Right.
So, okay. Yeah. So for us, if this was taking place in Chicago, would we feel the same?
Well, but the
you recognize
what,
everything.
But
it's
what?
Like,
first of all, what elements of Chicago like can you? Because it's easy to put on screen, L.A. or Hollywood in general, kind of like the over the top.
Navy Pier, Wrigleyville.
No. Well, I'm talking about like this, the surgically enhanced people. Yeah. I'm not talking like locations.
Corruption shit, you know, you do all that, you know.
But there's like, there's more like,
Chicago.
It feels like there's more to it in L.A.
It's surface level, you know.
But there's more like outrageous things that happen in L.A. because it's Hollywood. Because everybody, forever and ever, is always like looking at Hollywood because it's like, you know, it's definitely its own little like insular place.
Yeah.
So you can identify these elements that make it Hollywood,
right?
Specifically, and that I mean, it's got more so in L.A. than. New York's got it too, but more so than Chicago. Chicago's more of a, it's a little blander in that regard, I guess. But there's definitely more elements you can pick out for LA that you can make fun of specifically.
Like, Chicago doesn't feel like a different world, just a big city.
Right.
I gotcha.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's more in common with like New York and Chicago, and LA is like the outside one. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's why. I feel you, bro.
All right. Well, I mean,
we covered surfing. They hang glide to a helicopter at the end.
Disney. Hang glide, which is really
to Disney. Yeah, because
fast.
They make that joke that it's Disney. Because they, what does he say? Snake says
that.
Hey,
thing in
is
Paris
that,
killed him.
Yes, exactly. That Paris, thing in Paris killed him. Yep.
Yeah.
It's Disney.
And Happy Town is the town from Back to the Future.
It really, it's the
Hill
square,
Valley.
It is the square
is
from named. Back to the Future.
It is Hill Valley. Yeah.
Clock Tower's in there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
All shot in the back lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It kind of made me sad to see it in such shambles.
Yeah. You're like, get out of here, you street rat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it before or after the fire?
Yeah.
First
this
or second?
This is definitely before.
Yeah. Is it still standing, or they rebuilt it? Or
it's oh, it's still
down?
There. No,
yeah.
It's still there.
It
a lot
burned down
of,
like a couple times in there, at least
yeah,
once.
Yeah, at least one, there was that big fire. I don't think it didn't take down the square. It took down a lot of like the other stuff, mm-hmm. but there was a big fire there. But yeah, I don't know. I think, have we covered it? I think we've covered it. There's nothing outstanding. We've discussed the ending, and now he shuts down the Earth.
So next, yeah. Escape from Earth. Or Ghosts of Mars, which somebody said was originally written as a Escape from New York or the
really?
Escape from Earth idea. They said Escape from Earth would be the third one, but
Escape
this one failed
Earth.
At the box office.
Yeah.
So instead, you get the Snake Plissken Chronicles comic book.
I'd
Everybody's
watch,
read it.
I'd
no?
watch him go to space. Be,
I would.
I'd want to watch that for sure.
No, I like him more as a Western figure. I don't want to see him in space.
Yeah, but that's Escape from or whatever. Yeah, I don't know how.
Escape from Cleveland.
Mars, yeah.
Escape from
yeah,
Cleveland.
He just wants to be alone. How much more alone do you get than in outer space?
Well, that's the end of the movie
yeah,
where he's just in the ship going.
There you go.
You guys, they can.
And then he, for the last time, he lights up. Yeah, just
lights it.
And then a little warning goes off, going,
yeah.
And he's like.
They can yep. never cover that magnificence with a helmet. That can't
no,
happen.
No, no, no. They wouldn't.
That can't happen.
No, no, like,
full,
no.
Like, full gear just hanging
just
out of his ship.
Just space. Yeah, floating around in zero G.
Yeah, that's
know?
All he needs.
Duster, no
Him
space.
Him in a jetpack.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever see a movie called Lockout with Guy Pearce?
No.
I wanted to see it.
Nope.
I still have not.
Where in the future, there's a asteroid or a space station that's a prison, and the president's daughter is doing a tour, and she gets kidnapped, and he is a criminal who is sent in there to get her out.
Spiritual sequel.
In 24 hours or less.
Produced by Luc Besson.
Yeah. John Carpenter sued him.
Sued him. Yes.
But have you seen the movie Doomsday where Rhona Mitra plays an eye-patched person who has to go behind a wall in order to get somebody out? I can't remember.
Oh, dear Lord.
Malcolm McDowell or
Did
something
John
like that.
I guarantee you it's Malcolm McDowell
no,
because that's all he does anymore.
Yeah.
Goddamn Malcolm McDowell. No, I skipped that movie. That didn't look good at all.
It's like a mashup between Escape from New York, Aliens, and like Excalibur, and then it ends up being The Road Warrior.
Yeah, you met Malcolm McDowell.
Yeah. It didn't look
good. It's like channel surfing.
Yeah. Nope. Skip that one.
All right.
I do like a Rhona Mitra every now and then, but other than that, nope.
Stick with The Hollow Man. No?
No, fuck that movie.
Oh, okay. We talked about that. You know what? I'm bringing that movie.
Oh my God.
Because
I will not be here for that.
You will be, because I will I will tell them we're picking a different movie, and then I will spring Hollow Man on you when you get here.
See, that's it.
You're just
episode.
Like, I got food poisoning from Colin's undercooked food. I have to go home. Goodbye.
All right, so we've covered Escape from LA,
I think
a little bit.
Escape from LA has been covered. I think there are still some questions that we will never answer, but
well, maybe we will on our wrap-ups.
Maybe.
Don't leave us, because what we're going to do is we're going to read some listener mail, and we hope you write into us, and then we're going to come around and do our final thoughts, where you're going to find out what each one of us thought of Escape from LA. I know right now you're probably going like, well, we got it broken down. We know who's going to go which way, but maybe you're wrong. Anything can happen.
Colin's going to come back and love
round.
This movie.
No. I've
you
said
never
it,
know.
I've said it before. I've been surprised by our wrap-ups.
Yep.
So
there you go.
You'll
so
see.
You go. So before then, we're going to summon Igor, our mailman. Igor, bring us the mail.
Masters, the mail. I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
Why, thank you, Igor.
Thanks, Igor. He's wearing an eye patch for the occasion.
Oh, you guys. No. That's a condition.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh.
God,
yeah.
Sean, why did you have to point it out?
That's really
Sorry,
insensitive.
Igor.
He's very sensitive.
Really sensitive.
Yeah, there he goes. Off into his little cave or whatever the hell that little culvert
his
is. His
little
in the
door
floor.
Down there.
He also just
he chewed a hole in the wall, is what he did.
He also just wants to be alone. So.
he shares something.
Like a nice hairpiece, like her.
Oh, that'd be great.
That's a good idea.
His birthday is coming up. We should get him something.
He would love that.
We should get him something.
At least for
and a
Halloween.
Duster, too. A duster to go with.
I don't think we'd find one that big.
Yeah.
He's a big guy.
All right. So if you'd like to We would like it if you write to us, because we want to know that you're listening and what you think of what we're doing. You can get a hold of us on Facebook.
Facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show.
Or Twitter.
@SatFreakShow.
Or you can email us.
SaturdayNightFreakShow@Yahoo.com.
I felt like you almost dropped the ball on that one. You're just no. Like...
There was hesitation.
Or
was that the wine cooler
I was
talking?
I was swallowing my wine cooler.
Okay.
Because gotcha. I'm back in the 90s on this episode. Oh, and I am throwing back some wine coolers.
We all are. Blue wine cooler and green wine. There were no flavors in the 90s. No. There was just colors. Green, colors.
This is pina colada. Why is pina colada blue? I don't know. Why is it blue?
Have you never had grape drink? That's just what it was called back then.
Orange drink.
There were no flavors.
Oh yeah,
just colors.
Wow. So
mail. That's where we're at. Mail.
Here we go. It actually is printed out in this day of electronic communication. Okay. So Derek Croston, I hope I'm saying your name right, Derek.
Hi, Derek.
Says on Facebook that this is my favorite movie podcast. It's like a book club discussion with movies.
Yay!
I love that.
I love book clubs.
Book club. Yes.
Yeah. Hopefully, we live up to that.
Right. It's like, and for next week, our book will be Escape from Cleveland.
Well, you're going to find out at the end of this episode. Oh, yeah. We find out, and hopefully, Sean is preparing his line now, but he has to remember who's.
Do I
pick?
Yeah, it's not my pick, is it? Okay.
So
I have no idea. That's the problem.
I'll give you a cue. So,
okay, thank you.
About Escape from L.A., All New Sucks says,
whoa, all right.
It's by no means a good movie, but it's very fun and very entertaining. The CGI sucks, is all CGI, as does all CGI, but the acting is well done.
I think you just boiled it down in our whole podcast to just a couple lines.
Way to go, Mr. Sucks.
Thanks. Yep. Way to go, Sucks.
About our episode Cursed, which we did 2 weeks ago, Chris Huddleston,
C-Hud,
writes in and says that Rick Baker's werewolf design looked much better than Canby's, which was in the movie.
You did post the pictures. Mm-hmm. They looked better. Yeah. I would have enjoyed that better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He says, put me in the Loves Werewolf Movies camp. Welcome aboard. Admittedly, there aren't many good ones, but I believe that in part is due to the dearth of movies in the subgenre compared to zombies, vampires, ghosts, etc. Do you think the difficulty in effectively creating a convincing looking creature is the reason we don't see more werewolf flicks?
Yes, it is much harder to make a cool werewolf than it is to make a cool zombie.
Right.
Much harder.
And if nothing else, to differentiate yourself from all the other werewolf movies that have come before. Mm-hmm. But you're trying to create something unique.
Need a different creature to do that? I think it's that Jekyll and Hyde thing. It's like, how many permutations can you do
right on
that story? It's like, oh, something's happening to me and my body's changing. Yeah. Ginger Snaps, I thought, was a good wrinkle on it. You know, awesome.
Ginger Snaps is good.
But like a lot of them, werewolf films are like, it's the same thing. Dude gets bit. Dude's like, oh my God, I'm turning into something that I can't control and I'm going to hurt the person that, you know, I love. It's like, you know, how many times can you do that?
Can we do what the movie where the guy is like purposely hunting down werewolves because he wants to get bitten because he wants to be a werewolf? Is
that like it's done? A fetish?
It's something. It's like he just wants that power. Yeah, he just like wants
like
to be furries. A werewolf.
It's like furries.
It's just called furry.
Like, except the ending of the movie is he gets bit by a furry and then he just starts transforming into a giant chipmunk.
Wait, this could be a movie.
This could be a movie. We said it.
Copyright it.
2017 Saturday Night Freak Show. We said it at a con, and that's where the whole thing goes down.
He's just having a good time, and then
that's
all of a sudden,
perfect.
There you go.
That's perfect.
Yeah. C2E2 this weekend.
There
we just shoot it now.
Yep.
Done.
Take your camera.
Everyone, take Monday off.
Yeah.
Robin Linneman Silverberg says,
that's
"I have
heck of a name." Robin.
Congratulations on your hyphenate name. says, "I hadn't thought about this in years. Now I have to the cursed, and now I have to go back and watch this again with insomnia and all. Maybe this will let me sleep."
Oh, there you go.
It might put you to sleep.
If there's a movie that's going to knock you out, it might be cursed.
It might put you to sleep.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that Robin did not like it the first time through.
Yeah. So I'm getting off of that. I can't imagine who. I can't imagine there are many people who did like it the first time through.
If you did, you can write to us on Facebook.
Facebook.com/SaturdayNightFreakShow.
On Twitter.
@SatFreakShow.
And via email.
SaturdayNightFreakShow@Yahoo.com.
What we should do is probably do that up front and then again at the mailbag.
But you messed your cue.
Sorry about that. It's all my fault.
You're all over the place,
Colin. I take responsibility. So now we're going to go through the final wrap-ups and we're going to begin with...
Colin! What did you think of Escape from Los Angeles?
Well, I thank you for asking me, Sean.
You're welcome. It's like, oh, it's almost like I had
you. yeah. So, well, I think, you know, where I'm coming from, I told you, I love Escape from New York. One of the, my favorite films of all time, I think.
You do.
Yeah. And so when I heard that they were making, finally, an Escape from L.A., like, I
were you excited?
Not, I could what, not yeah. contain myself.
Yeah.
Couldn't get, I was like, that was the thing I think that I was most looking forward to. I mean, like, I love that first one so much, right? And it was like, he's getting a Carpenter's getting a budget, getting the gang back together, and they're going to make a sequel to Escape from New York. And you get into the theater, and they've got that hopped up version of the music comes on. Like, yeah, then eventually you settle into this kind of rhythm that, like, oh, it's basically just a remake of the first movie, and then the CGI hits you, and then the performances, and it's just so campy, and you can feel the disappointment, like, creeping in. Heartbreak is the way I would describe my viewing of this movie in the theater, but it was kind of like one of denial, where you're still like, but Snake Plissken's still a badass.
Yeah.
He is still a badass. And I'm thinking earth. Like that's when you guys are saying like this movie's very serious. It's because Snake Plissken's serious. He doesn't know he's in a comedy.
Maybe that's it. Yeah, there you go. That's true. Maybe that's
okay,
it.
Okay, that's kind of perfect, actually. Yeah.
And Snake Plissken doesn't know he's in a comedy. Okay,
yeah, so it's like, does he escape with his dignity intact? I don't know. There is the surfboarding scene. Where he high fives Henry Fonda before jumping onto the trunk of
Fonda.
Map to the Stars Eddie's car.
I can forgive him for that.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a tough one. I did have fun watching it tonight, even though I was sitting there going like, "Come on, like that's stupid." I mean, that's maybe the thing. It's stupid in so many ways that I guess, you know, makes me wonder about, like, you know, or it did make me wonder about the first movie. I'm like, is the first movie was written by the same people, Deborah Hill and John Carpenter and Nick Castle, sorry.
Yes.
Wrote the first one. And, you know, like, am I holding that to a higher standard than it should be? But there's something, you know, that, you know, it's one of those cases where the first movie works, I think, like, on a level in spite of itself in a personal way. And I think a lot of you listening probably had the same experience with Escape from New York. It may not be the best movie ever made, but it feels like it is in some ways. And then when you compare this one to it, it's like, oh man, they're just making a mockery of everything that I loved about the first movie. It's like the people who made this movie don't like Escape from New York, or the things that they liked about Escape from New York aren't the things that I liked about it, and they just completely missed the mark. Except, like I said, Kurt Russell is Snake Plissken.
Yep. Yeah.
Even 15 years later,
yep.
Still got back into the headspace. I mean, you could say, well, what really is there to the character? He just basically stares and says, like, I don't give a fuck, you know? In but like 16 different ways or 25 ways, whatever, how many,
like
many words there were.
We like that.
Yeah. So I had fun watching it tonight. I mean, like, there were parts of it toward the end. I'm like, well, this is like entertaining in spite of itself. But I am going to say this is a bad movie. One of the worst of Carpenter's career. I think it's his only sequel.
It's the only sequel he directed. Yeah.
And Carpenter believes that this movie is 10 times better than the original film. In an interview, he said as much, and he's like, you know, give it time. This will take, you know, eventually it will, you know, get its dues, you know, people will come around to it. But I'm like, fuck, man.
Gets it tonight.
I've seen other articles.
Years.
I was looking it up, and there are people like in defense of Escape from L.A. You know, there's articles on the, you know, but you can find that contrarian.
Sure,
right?
Yeah.
The people who like are, Halloween
yeah.
3.
Yeah, exactly. Sean, how do you feel about Halloween 3?
I don't really.
Okay, know. All right.
We have sorry. A whole podcast.
Well, there's a whole podcast where, it's like, it's just
where Sean's too world is shattered. It's
just... Now, do you think that John Carpenter enjoyed this one more because he got to fulfill some of his Western fantasies?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. This one, because I think this was more fun for him to make. And I think for him personally, it was like, you know, look, this one's got more lights. This one's got, you know, that's very well lit, which is not a good thing for the movie, you know, but it's like, look, well, we got more lights.
That's like a Travis comment. It's like, how many lights we got? Turn them all off. Yeah, this one, see everything.
This one did it, you know.
We got a problem? Throw some money at it.
Yeah. He had the money to throw at his problems. Unfortunately, he didn't have the money to throw at the, you know, special effects house. But, I don't know. It does seem self-indulgent. I think, you know, it's like either you're on its wavelength or in Los Angeles or you like bad movies and, you know, you'll get a big kick out of it. I just wanted to see more Snake Plissken. And so the fact that he's in it, you know, the pure Snake Plissken before we get whatever the hell Rodriguez delivers as the pale imitation. Mm. Let's just say it right now. It doesn't matter how good it is. So I don't know.
Tough one, huh?
Yeah, it's a tough one because I'm like going like, I shouldn't recommend this to anybody. Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to recommend it. Go watch Escape from New York again. But I know you're going to watch Escape from L.A. anyway. You're curious. So, yeah. I'm going to say pass on Escape from L.A. There you go. Holly.
That's forever, by the way. You can never watch or experience this movie again. That's okay. Did you not know that?
I have avoided it for years. I had it on Laserdisc. I sold it.
Laserdisc. That was the last time I saw it. He sold it.
I kind of love how you describe that he doesn't know he's in a comedy. It made me think of, he's like Arnold Schwarzenegger in A Last Action Hero.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't know that what's around him is real. He doesn't know it's a comedy. That's totally what I thought.
He doesn't
know
we're making fun of everything you've done for the last 15 years.
He's like, he has no recollection of this world whatsoever. I had to agree. This was so cheesy, so stupid and silly, and I loved every second of it. It was so much fun. Like the special effects are just not.
We can say that. They're not. They barely exist.
But it hits those 90s checklist points that we all love so much, and there's something about. Like, we've talked about it with other movies, talked about Demolition Man. There is a 90s cheese level that is so satisfying. And this hits that for me. Like, I can't compare it to Escape from New York, because I have not seen Escape from New York in so many years that I don't remember it. So maybe that helps sway my opinion of this, because I don't have that reference to something that may be a better quality movie, you know, depending on argument. But I thought this movie was so much fun. It's silly, but it's silly in all the right places. So I'd say definitely check out Escape from LA if you want a fun 90s movie to watch, for sure. It's not bad enough to say that it's not fun. So I gotta say, for sure, recommend.
This is not the...
I don't know where this one is going. This is the one where I don't know where it's going.
This is not the worst movie I've ever watched, for sure. Like,
good.
Yeah. Like, it is, like, I would say, overall, it is a competently made movie.
With those special effects?
I mean, but at the same time, like, you gotta take the time period into consideration with that, you know? But at the same time, it's very hard for me to believe the producers saw the dailies of that surfing scene and was like, this looks great. Like, you know, like...
Jurassic Park was before this.
Exactly.
Independence Day was the same year.
Yeah.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Think about that. Independence Day was the same year as this
movie. I did not even, like, put that together. Yeah. I'm not even, like, comparing it to other...
Look at the drastic difference.
I'm not even thinking of that.
When you take into consideration the year and the budget they had, there's no excuse for it. Like,
right.
But that to me, that makes it even more hilarious that they're like, make it. Done. Like, this is it.
You know, you hear about those movies, like we talked about with Monkey Shine, so like how like George Romero was like drinking like a bottle of vodka a day making that movie. Mm-hmm. And that's what he said, so it's probably more than that.
Yeah.
But like, it makes me wonder, like, John Carpenter, was there like is this like a rough patch in your life? Like,
this is
you
a know, Coke like, era yeah, was this like your,
but like,
this was a Coke.
Yeah,
movie.
Like,
yeah.
Because like, like what we saw is the finished product. So how rough was like the dailies that they were watching, you know? I don't know.
Just go, no, it'll be better.
Wait
until we put the texture maps on.
Yeah, yeah. This is a fix it in post movie.
It's not campy and silly enough to be like a fun ride for me. It's like, it's just short of that. But at the same time, like, you just love Kurt Russell so much. You kind of like take points off of it being a bad movie because you love Kurt Russell so much. I try to think of it as like, what if that was Jeff Bridges? And I think if that was Jeff Bridges, this would be a fucking terrible movie that no one would ever want to remember. Yeah. And when I think of it in the scope of John Carpenter movies, it's definitely at the bottom. It's way at the bottom. You know, but I mean, that's a director that's had a lot of great hits over and over again. I don't think there's anything in this movie you can't get from just watching the first one or from watching Demolition Man, you know?
True.
Goddamn true. Demolition Man.
Just watch Escape from New York or watch Demolition Man. I don't think this movie, like, you know, really what? Checks
Demolition
any of the boxes.
Demolition Man does not have Snake Plissken.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. But then you just watch Escape from New York, which is the same story, you know? It's too similar and it's too cheap to be worthwhile. I will say, however, this movie did give me my first cigarette craving in 7 years. At the end of the movie, when he was lighting up that American Spirit, the way he enjoyed it looked like a genuine cigarette smoker enjoying a cigarette. So I was like,
don't you just love watching that?
It's yeah,
just
like, because it's you like, can always tell when actors are like faking it. Yeah, you know? Like, yeah,
and you're just like, oh, he enjoyed it.
Or like the worst thing is like,
and it's Kurt Russell enjoying lighting it up. It's like,
and he's so great. Like you can't like,
because you want to be Kurt Russell lighting up a cigarette.
Like Snake Plissken is always a great character no matter how bad the movie is around him. So, like, he makes up for a lot of the weak points of this movie. But, like, oh, man, have you ever seen a movie, though, where, like, they're clearly smoking fake cigarettes and it, like, just drives you crazy?
Yeah.
That wasn't the case in this movie. And so I wouldn't recommend it. Just say watch Escape from New York or watch Demolition Man. Don't watch this movie. There's nothing new to get out of it other than the bad CGI.
What about... Well, there's no surfing in Demolition Man.
There's no surfing.
Very true. I almost disagree.
I don't need the surfing scene though.
I almost disagree with that wholeheartedly. That you can't. Right. That you can just go back and watch Escape from New York and get the same thing out of this movie. I don't think that is the case at all. I think there is comparatively. If
she
we're just
meant the good parts. I'm sorry.
Sam.
I shouldn't have done that.
If you want to go watch the boring parts of Escape from New York, go for it. If you want to watch something that is more colorful, there's more out there character work in this movie. First of all, there's like different in Escape from New York. It doesn't feel to me that there's more characters that kind of pop off the screen. It kind of feels like, I mean, maybe that's just me wanting what I want. I like that the different characters that he meets along his adventure into L.A. are just different characters that pop off the screen that offer different things, different tastes, if you will, as he's going through it. Mm-hmm. I like that about this movie. I like that we get the different areas of it. It's hard. Like I said before, like if Kurt Russell and John Carpenter weren't attached to this movie, you'd never hear about this thing. This would be some way this would end up on, you know, Netflix at Mystery Science Theater, like just some bad movie that they bring up now and again. But it does have those two on it. And for this movie, you want to watch Snake Plissken, and you get him in this movie. Again, we all know, like, there are bad parts of this movie. There are obviously bad parts of this movie. CG is bad in this movie. There's some other... I mean, it's an exact ripoff of the first one. There's a very... the same beats happen in this movie. I won't deny that at all. But I have more fun watching this movie, and I'm trying to distance myself from nostalgia, and I think I can do that for this movie. If I can look at it objectively, even though I did watch this more as a kid, like the people he encounters in this movie seem more fun to me, and there's more going on. And yes, he does surf with Peter Fonda, but I like that because it is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous, but I like where he goes in this movie, and it's more fun to me. Like I get the more serious tone that Escape from New York has. And that movie's perfectly fine. I don't dislike that movie. It's a perfectly fine movie. But if it came down to it, I think I would want my Western, more explicit Snake Plissken in this movie. And that's why I would recommend this movie. I think there's just bigger characters in this movie. I think everybody gets the chance to go bigger. I think that was probably the purpose of this movie. You got John Carpenter and Kurt Russell they wrote it together. They got the chance to make it kind of that character bigger than life. And maybe to the detriment of the overall movie, sure. But I think they had fun with it. I have fun watching that character be, you know, bigger than he was in the other ones. And that's why I recommend it. I like the characters in this, and I like the places they go. So I recommend Escape from L.A. I recommend it over Escape from New York. I like it better.
There it is.
Well, if you agree with Sean, we hope that you'll, or disagree with him, you'll write
if
in.
If you agree.
On one of our social media channels, which I'm not going to.
We said them all. Yeah. You should have heard them.
It's not often we're split in half on our wrap-ups.
Yeah. I know.
That's so true. Yeah.
When was the last time? We are not even keeping score.
Is there a deciding vote? This is where Travis walks down the stairs. He's like, I have an opinion. Just sidles up for a half hour.
Well, he'd be escaped from New York all the way. He would be.
Oh, yeah. No, he would be. I'd be out of my ass on that one. But we're deadlocked.
All right. So, deadlocked. What does that mean? That means you can't watch it.
That means you have to watch it and make your own decision. That's where it comes down to, listener, viewer, reader. You must watch this.
Blind person.
Blind person brailing this show. You must watch this movie and tell us what you think of it.
That's what's important. We want to hear. So that means next week we're going to watch a movie that's chosen by...
Holly.
Me.
What are we watching next week?
Out, Sean.
That's me pointed. I had no idea. I do not keep track of the schedule.
I know. It's okay. Well, it's prom season, guys, so gonna watch.
Oh no!
We're gonna watch My Boyfriend's Back from 1993.
Welcome to the 2017. It's just gonna be 90s all year.
I should add, this begins my summer of 90s.
The summer of 90s.
Yep.
Don't worry, listener. I'm just gonna keep throwing. I'm lobbing them in from all the decades. Yeah. All right. So that's next week on the Saturday Night Freak Show, and until then, the basement is going dark.